AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear headed, full of energy and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop once a day before breakfast and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Fighting Cock is back, and in Flab's absence, we talk about the football. Swansea, CSKA Moscow and Manchester United. And this episode is for bankrupt Spurs. Get well soon, mate.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting.
It's season 6, episode 22 of the Fighting Cock podcast, and I'm here with the lovely Charlie Parrish.
Hey, Chris.
And Anthony Lombardi.
Hello, Windy. Fucking hell.
How's it going, lads?
Chris, sorry, Windy.
No, it's all right. It's all right. No, don't. Whatever. I'll answer to anything. Anything you say, Charlie.
And hey, Bardi, it's good to be back. It's our first time on together.
I know it is. I'm sticking out on the way here.
And Charlie's first appearance of the season as well.
Yeah.
And it's been too long.
Even more exciting than that, this is like the extra inch taking over the fighting cock.
Oh, is it? I hadn't realised that. Is that what we're doing here?
I think so. It's a takeover.
I mean, this was a potential extra inch lineup. It had been mooted for a while that Charlie might be one of our extra inch guests, so it's a treat as an audition, Charlie.
There'll be minimal heat graphs, guys. Don't switch off.
Cool. As you can tell, we've got no Flav this week. He is having a well-earned break. So you've got me for the next hour or so. couple of announcements that Flav wanted me to put out there first and foremost. Firstly, you can still get your bobble hats from the Sock Council and Christmas jumpers with the lovely Danny Rose and Moussa Dembélé pictures. Rose is my favourite one because he looks suitably miserable, suitably Danny.
I've ordered a Danny one.
It's a really good jumper. They are still available, but anyone still wanting the jumper outside the UK, you've kind of missed the boat on that one, I'm afraid. If you're within the EU, you might get it in time for Christmas, but it's at your own risk. The other thing to say is that we are hopefully doing a live show. As we said, it's the 21st of January when we play Manchester City, and there should be some more information on that out shortly. We were out for a drink on Saturday, and we were talking a lot about the live show and potential Bardi's brainbuster lineups.
I like the idea of a podium in the middle of the crowd and like having like a little circle and having tea surrounded by like people after his crown.
But anyone can just put their hat in the ring and challenge tea at any point.
Yeah.
Why not? I like this idea. I think it would be quite intense, but I think that's what tea needs to lose.
Yeah, I think so.
He needs the pressure built up a bit. Gavin Perrottet, sorry if I got your name wrong, Gavin, says, with his absence becoming more frequent, should this be Flav's last season on the pod?
Oh, well, Flav is like that the aging kind of forward. You know, he's a bit like Moussa Dembélé. He can't do two pods in a week. You've got to rest him. You've got to pick his battles. When he's on and he's on form, he's amazing. But, you know, it's time for the younger crew to take over.
Flav with his dodgy hip.
He's Ledley.
He's Ledley. To be honest, he is Ledley because he shows up with no preparation at all and just nails it 9 times out of 10.
Just does an hour in the pool, I hear, as well. That's his preparation.
So there you go, Gavin. One final thing before we get into the podcast proper. I just got a sort of bit of sad news to tell people. You might know Bancroft Spurs on Twitter, who's a good friend of mine. Bancroft has had a really bad accident. He cycles to work, and last week he got knocked off his bike, and he's done significant damage. He's damaged his spine quite seriously, to the extent where he's currently lying in a hospital bed, unable to move. He can't sit up at an angle greater than 45 degrees, and he's in a really bad way. I mean, he hasn't made a big deal of it because that's not his style. He's not someone who shouts about these things, but he put a thing out on Facebook, and obviously being his friend, I've been in touch. And I told some other friends as well. And Charlie had a contact. And Charlie contacted his contact. And this contact knew Ryan Mason, who obviously, if you know Bancroft, you'll know he's a big Ryan Mason fan. And we got back from Ryan Mason the most lovely personal message to Bancroft, which absolutely made his day, cheered him up no end. So thank you, Charlie, for doing that. It was a really nice thing to do, mate.
Not at all. It was very much Ryan's people who were fantastic, and Ryan himself, because this message is pretty amazing, actually.
It was really a beautiful thing for him to have done. Just such a nice gesture. I mean, when footballers must get these kind of weird requests all the time about, oh, can you say this to my friend who's had an injury? Can you say this to my friend on his birthday? It really felt like he'd gone to quite significant lengths to make it personal, and he kind of sat on his sofa and had someone film him. It's a lovely thing to do.
And he also mentioned that he has read an awful lot of Bancroft's blogs in the past, particularly the ones about him, I imagine. Yeah. And I'm told that that's legit. That's not just something he's saying to, you know, make Bancroft feel better or anything like that. So
such a nice thing for Ryan Mason to do.
Real Coy's hero, Ryan.
Love that guy. But all our best wishes to Bancroft Spurs, who's just a lovely guy.
Yeah, go well soon, Kev.
Absolutely does not deserve this to have happened to him. And actually, on my journey here, I drive from outer West London to where we record the pod, in sort of central-ish. And I saw, you see all these Deliveroo drivers now riding their bikes, and I saw some horrendous driving and people near misses. So Just be careful when you're driving. Yeah. For God's sake, the cyclists have as much right to use the road as you do, and we should all respect each other, because it's terrifying for cyclists on the road in London, particularly at this kind of time of year where it goes dark very early as well, and everyone's doing their commute home in that light. It's horrible. But get well soon, Kev. All right, we'll talk a little bit about the Swansea game. Obviously, five goal thriller from the Spurs' perspective. Were we worth five goals?
Well, it was pretty easy, to be honest with you. We have a 100% record against Swansea at White Hart Lane. We've played them six times and beat them six times. That's our best record against any team we've played more than four times. You know, it's quite... I think I said last week they were the perfect team to turn up. Mm. They had a game plan, it got undone, and then they didn't know how to deal with us. And it was a real good confidence boost, I think. The players needed it. We haven't won many games, so I think it was the perfect team to play at the perfect time.
You said they had a game plan. What do you think what was their intention?
We wanted to keep it tight and try and stifle us and almost make us start to get worried, worry ourselves again, yeah. into either overcommitting or doing an error and letting maybe conceding a lucky goal. But the penalty changed it.
I mean, they had some real pace on the flanks, which concerned me a bit before. I think Montero often plays quite well against us, mainly at their place, but he's a talent, I think. And then Barrow on the other wing is also pretty grease lightning. Yeah. But then as soon as you saw that they dropped Llorente, despite him being the sort of two-goal hero from the previous week and offering them a real aerial threat, which you think they might be able to take advantage of, and instead just going with Guilfi up front on his own, it was clear that keeping it to 0-0 was the plan. And I don't think I've ever seen a team just completely fall to bits once plan A went out the window like I have in that way. They were so toothless. I mean, they didn't win a corner. You know, they had one shot off target and that was it. And we had, 20 odds? Yeah. I mean, it was astonishing. And they looked to me like a team, despite the drama and, you know, last minute sort of craziness of that Palace win, they looked like a team that was not listening to their manager and had tuned out, would much rather have someone else sort of giving them instruction, because that was about as gutless a performance as I've seen at White Hart Lane, and I say that as a Spurs fan.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't disagree with any of that, and I feel like they did set up the team to have pace on the counter, and Montero is a player that Walker's talked about before and said that he's one of his toughest opponents.
He gave him a torrid time. I think was it last season, the 2-2? Mm. He gave him a torrid time throughout.
He's a really good player. You feel like he's one of those guys that I imagine, were he at a bigger club, would really kick on, but he's just sort of stuck in that mire of, you know, he's in and out of their team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, him and Routledge basically compete for a spot in the team, which is, it says a lot, doesn't it? But they didn't really get the ball out to their wide players early enough. They didn't have anything really in attack for the majority of the game. Sigurdsson's not at his best playing that false nine role. No. I can see why they do it, because it means he gets as much of the ball as they can give to him. If he's got no one ahead of him to pass to, it limits
to get knockdowns. You want Llorente knocking the ball down to him and him sort of taking it first time. But
yeah, some of his best form for Swansea is when he used to play up front with Boney, and it was that quick 1-2, nice little through ball. But if he's on his own, he's limited to just maybe a set piece or a long range shot.
Yeah, my Let's Save Guilfi campaign, the wheels fell off a bit on Saturday, I think, because he didn't look like a guy that could contribute much to
really,
a top 40.
You really love Guilfi.
I do love Guilfi, but I'm also aware that a lot of that is that he's like a nice guy who's handsome and just like is a cool player with a cool middle name. It's Thor.
That is awesome.
And you know, I also think he's the sort of guy that potentially could give Eriksen some competition. And I think that the difference between us and perhaps Chelsea and City and other teams is that we don't have sort of two really, really good players for every position. We have, you know, maybe one and a half. And to me, to have someone like a Sigurdsson come off the bench in certain matches or to play in certain cup games or whatever, instead of, you know, perhaps waiting for an Nkudu to come good or hoping that Onamar's going to kick on, yeah, this is another... I'm doing it again. I need to be quiet about Guilfi Sigurdsson.
No, that's such a pertinent point that we haven't quite got the cover for Eriksen in particular. But
speaking of Eriksen, though, he was pretty good. I thought. I mean, like the whole team, I thought he was a bit slow to start. His passes weren't quite on the money. But I can imagine that's the sort of game, as Bardi says, not just Eriksen but the whole team needed.
There was something about his first goal, though, where if he could have got out of that challenge, he would have. You know, as the ball was dropping to him, there was a split second, it was like, oh shit, I'm going to get clattered, and he kind of flinched away and then it bounced in. You can imagine if that was in the middle of the pitch, he would have run away from that tackle.
I mean, this is it. We say that Eriksen bottled challenges, and he basically bottled a goal on Saturday, which is just...
But maybe this is the turning point. Maybe, you know,
But
on another way, that would have spun out. But instead,
the key for that goal was the fact that he was there. He'd put himself between the posts, that close to the goal, and he got on the end of something. And we've not seen enough of that from Eriksen in recent weeks. So I was pleased to see him in that position. And yeah, he kind of ducked out of the challenge a little bit, but you know, they all count. Yeah. Everyone needs one to go in off their backside a few times. Eriksen obviously scored twice. He also got an assist and created seven chances throughout that game. So he kind of. Yes, the opposition's horrendous, but it felt like he was sort of back to where we'd expect him to be, given the talent at his disposal. He's such a good player who's been underperforming for some time.
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with the Chelsea goal. I think that was a big weight off his shoulders, and then it carried on to this game. And now hopefully he can, you know Eriksen, when he's on form, he's able to carry that form over a course of like a couple of months. So hopefully now this is the beginning of a good run of form for him.
I imagine that us reverting to something sort of very close to the formation that we played all of last season might have helped him as well. I think having Son, Dele and Eriksen in that sort of rotating wheel of three behind Kane, it suddenly felt a lot more familiar to me as a fan, even, let alone what the players must have felt. And I think Eriksen is someone who really benefits from continuity and sort of having those players around him. And I think those two are a good fit for him. I think, you know, Dele looked back to his sort of freewheeling, you know, trick trying best, and a lot of it was coming off again, partly because the opposition was dog awful. But I think for Eriksen, having Son there as well to kind of release and to sort of play into space really helps. I was pleased to see that 4-2-3-1 back in favour personally.
Let's talk a little bit about Dele Alli, because he had a strange game in many ways. So the first goal came at a good time. I mean, we looked for that half like we were going to have a really good half of football and go in 0-0, which would have been super frustrating. And the goal came at just the right time, and it came in a slightly controversial way. So Dele Alli's running away from goal, and he sort of dangles a leg to be clipped. And there's no doubt it was clipped. But he did create that contact, in essence. And then he turns around and does this kind of butter wouldn't melt look at the referee and scowls and sort of says, come on, how's that not a penalty? And it eventually gets given, having at first looked like it was probably not going to be given. What do you make of that? Is that something you would want our players to do?
Well, you know, let's get it straight. Ali's been diving all season, and it's not been great. I'm not too keen on diving, but it is part of the game. But as long as he's making those runs, and if he's manufacturing the challenge, then I don't know. I'm not going to say no, don't take a penalty. I'm not going to say we should like do the sportsmanship thing and kick it out. Leipzig against Schalke this weekend, the chap went down under no contact with the goalkeeper, and the ref gave a penalty. And he didn't tell the referee that it wasn't a penalty, but he told everybody else, and he thought that would kind of like cleanse his soul, but it didn't. And Leipzig scored, and you know. But would I want Ali to go to the referee? No, it's not a penalty, no. Do I like diving? No, but then I'm not going to turn away a penalty.
I think that pragmatic view is probably the one that most fans hold. I think also that the fact that Ali's English is what becomes an issue for people. I think, yeah. I mean, Pochettino spoke about the English having a rather saintly view of diving, and yet, you know, the Michael Owen Pochettino incident. I've just ruined Barley's.
Charlie's reading
just scribbled
all
out
my,
his
he's reading
belt
my
tip.
Notes.
Sorry, I can't read your terrible handwriting.
Sharpie's out.
And I think, had it been, you know, Son or Eriksen or Dembele, perhaps, I don't think it gets spoken up about. But as Dele is the sort of young, great hope of English football in many ways, we don't want our boys doing that, and so it becomes an issue. But that's just the press for you.
I think Pochettino used the quote that Owen jumped like he was in a swimming pool, which I quite like that.
But so Poch was then talking about how essentially he was taught to dive, which is something that is is an unpleasant truth that no one wanted to speak about, that foreign players, continental players, were learning the dark arts on the training ground and putting them into practice on the pitch. I don't think that's something that I thought anyone would ever admit to, but you know, in a way, fair play to him for being honest and saying it as it is. He did say that he wouldn't do the same. He wouldn't be teaching our players how to dive. But equally, he seemed to want to kind of back away from the incident a little bit, as if, like Bardi said, he wasn't that bothered by it, and we got the penalty, and it essentially broke the deadlock. And
well, it was
who
a
knows?
Shame for that reason. I think, you know, it was annoying that a 5-0
drubbing of a Premier League team has a sort of asterisk against it. It's like, well, they might not have got that 5-0 had they not cheated to get the first goal. And as you said, Wendy, like, you know, in the stands, I was getting really frustrated. It was 39 minutes. We hadn't really created anything clear cut. Kane had that header that Fabianski saved, and it looked like Fabianski was going to have one of his sort of blinders against us that he likes to have. And it's a pity in a way that the sort of floodgates open because of that. And as Bardi says, you don't want any of your players doing it. However, we're in 2016 and football's football. Football's a murky.
The stakes are high.
Yeah, exactly. And like it or not, I think Ali does have that in him. You know, like, he's got that petulant side and he's got that sort of gamesmanship to him as well. And, you know, that probably is why he's so good. It's like we were saying last year.
Yeah, on a positive side, it's a bit like how Bale was when he was with us. That he's someone who runs with the ball and takes players on, so he does commit defenders.
That's a good point.
So the possibility of him getting fouled and hitting the penalty just clipped. Sometimes it will naturally occur to
him. That's a point I was going to make, and actually, I'm a strong believer that sometimes a little bit of contact can make you go to ground more than a lot of people understand, because it knocks you off your stride. And once your stride's kind of out of sync, it's very hard to stay on your feet then. I mean, the pace that these guys are running at, they're going to go down. Yes, the kind of leg flicks at the end to make it a bit
I don't know if this one on Saturday was quite that, hear you entirely.
The other thing I wanted to say was, you mentioned there was an asterisk over the win. The only thing I'd say to that is that 2 minutes into the game, Swansea should be down to 10 men, because, my God, did someone need to decapitate Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
Obviously, Neil Taylor is not that kind of player, as they say, and that was muttered immediately after the incident by Tony Gale in commentary.
Of course.
because Tony Gale. But that challenge was horrendously dangerous, and when it first happened, I honestly was worried for Kyle Walker's eye, because that was so close to getting him straight in the eye socket.
Fair play to Kyle, he had an absolute barnstormer of a game after that. He was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I said on Twitter that it was Oscar Garley levels of bravery.
I'm just thinking, you know, like sometimes when you break your sight or like on your binoculars or something, maybe because he had one eye, his depth of field changed.
His crossing was a lot better than it was normally.
You know, like when you go to the opticians and you cover one eye, you see better with one eye. Maybe that's what we should do.
We need
a patch.
An eye patch. Yeah.
I mean, I was good. One of the things I had lined up to say was that Walker's crossing recently has really improved, but maybe that was it. Maybe it was just the fact that he'd been kicked in the face that did it. But in all seriousness, I do think it's something that he's clearly worked on, because Walker has always been someone he's been quite conservative. He gets to the byline and he cuts back, or he passes back to someone else who can cross,
or he doesn't even get to the byline.
Or he doesn't get to the byline.
He won't challenge his man. He'll just check back. Which
he'll
is
carry the ball 40 yards and then check. But actually, his crossing on the run in recent weeks, I think, has really improved. It hasn't got to kind of Kieran Trippier levels of quality yet, but I think there's potential there. Certainly, I see more potential with Walker's crossing than Rose's crossing, which I think he's got plenty to work on.
It's
with
a bit wayward,
crossing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Danny should just shoot all the time. I'd be happy for that. Just shoot, Danny.
I mean, obviously, defensively, we were pretty much unchallenged, but I thought Vertonghen and Dyer were excellent. Basically, they would shuttle over to the touchline, win the ball seamlessly from the Swansea forward or winger, and then play mate from the back. And it was a joy to behold. And that suits Vertonghen so well, because he's so good on the ball, so good in possession. He had an excellent game. The interesting thing with the Dyer situation is that he's starting to settle into that centre-back role a bit more now and playing better. Wanyama's kind of... he's still playing well, but he's dropped a little bit from when he was at his absolute peak slightly earlier in the season. So what happens when Alderweireld comes back? Do we drop Dyer? Do we drop Wanyama?
I think you drop Dyer. There's no other way. You're not going to drop Wanyama, not yet. His form may have dropped off a bit, but it's still at a really high level.
I think particularly for Old Trafford, you would imagine that it would be Wanyama and Dembele to go away at Manchester United and really have that muscle for a sort of titanic tussle in midfield. But you're right, Dyer's slowly but surely looking like a centre-back again. However, I think his ceiling as a central midfielder to me now seems to be that much higher. I mean, I don't think there's you know, even Arsenal and Chelsea fans couldn't really argue that he wasn't one of the top five central defensive midfielders in the league last year. Is that what potentially he could be as a centre back? I don't think so right now. So it'd be a shame to curtail his progress in a position that he showed not just potential but, you know, international worthy form. But I don't think Wanyama deserves to be dropped, and I certainly don't think you can play Dier and Wanyama together. I think that just becomes a creative vacuum.
I mean, do you think there's an argument that Dier and Wanyama are kind of rotated depending on who's most suited to the opposition? So in a game where we're going to be expecting to play lots more side-to-side kind of switches, Dier might be better in a game which is a bit more... I don't know how to phrase it. Where you'd expect someone to have to carry the ball forward, then Wanyama would be better.
And I imagine that's why Wanyama was signed. You know, Dier was one of our best players last season, so you can't imagine in Pochettino's head that he figured really that Wanyama was coming in to directly replace Dier in the first team. It probably to him would have been very much that, you know, I now have two elite level defensive midfielders who played depending on the opposition. You'd hope, anyway.
Oh, that is such like. So what an embarrassment of riches for Spurs to have two quality defensive midfielders. I don't remember the last time we had that. I really don't. Like,
no.
They're so good.
We've barely ever had one solid defensive midfielder.
Look at the dancing in the street that greeted Wilson Palacios' arrival.
we were spoiled a bit with Sandro and then Parker.
Yeah.
Most of my lifetime, like, defensive midfield has been an issue.
Yeah.
I still think that partnership of Sandro and Dembele, that had potential to be something special until Sandro's knee went.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was beautiful. That playing against Man, that was Ferguson's Man U as well.
Yeah,
was it? That was Ferguson's Man U that we
3-2
that we beat. You know, it wasn't a Moyes or a Van Gaal incarnation of it. Those two were good.
So we mentioned that Alderweireld might be back in time for the United game.
Very exciting.
Do we just throw him straight in?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I think I would agree. I mean, it does seem quite unpoch to do that. But having said that, I'm going to cough, excuse me. I think the fact that he wasn't in the squad this week and yet had trained kind of showed that this is the week where we don't throw him straight in. And then he'll be ready for the next week.
Yeah, we didn't need him.
I think if we were playing United this past weekend, he would have played. But I think he probably figured that Dier and Jan could cope with the mighty Swansea.
And Charlie, we were talking before the podcast started recording about Sissoko and some words you had with people sat around you on the ground.
I'd like to caveat this by saying first off that Musa Sissoko has been largely dreadful in a Tottenham shirt, and I'm not in any way some sort of blinded cheerleader or part of the Musa Sissoko payroll or anything like that, and he's got an awful lot to do to prove that he's, you know, worthy of a place on the bench, let alone in the starting lineup right now, just regardless of how much he costs or how well he plays for France. But so I was in the East Stand and was sat with my friend Phil, and behind us there are a sort of gaggle of about six, seven or eight guys who, as soon as Sissoko came on, were just sort of, you know, mocking him, sort of pretend clapping, just comment after comment after comment after comment. And I don't normally say anything because everyone's entitled to their opinion, you know. I don't go looking for trouble. I'm probably useless in a fight situation. I couldn't help myself. It was 4-0. I just turned around and said, look, you know, we're 4-0 up. This guy's new to the team. Why don't we just, you know, why don't we try getting behind him rather than sort of belittling him and, you know, openly laughing at him? Just seems to be incredibly counterproductive to me. I didn't say that. That would go down very well. I said something a bit more flustered and whatever. And they all sort of rounded on me, and I spent the last 10 minutes of the game fearing that I was going to get cornered.
Jumped outside.
Cornered outside a pub. But, you know, I think he is now easily the poster boy for, you know, underperformance in the Spurs team, and
he's our scapegoat.
He's the scapegoat. He's the new. He's, you know, thank Eric Lamella's probably sending him, you know, an enormous Christmas present to say thank you for taking that mantle off me. And it made me. I was saying this on Saturday in the pub. Like, it made me wonder if Pochettino speaking out the way that he did was that wiser thing to do, because it allows the fans then to kind of,
you know, almost legitimizes using him in that way and everyone getting on his back. And again, I'd like to say, you know, if a player plays poorly, which he has been, then fine, he's open to critique. It's just, I feel like when you're in the stadium, and also when you're winning 4-0, you know, if you're losing at home to Swansea, fine, like, you know, you can shout at the players all you want in my book, but when it should be a sort of celebratory mood and, you know, someone comes on and you're like, yeah, let's cheer him on, you know, this guy's had a hard time, this is the perfect opportunity for him to do something. And he did all right. He didn't do brilliantly, but, you know, he got an assist and he did all right. But yeah, go on, Musa.
I'd quite like us to see, put down on paper, like a scapegoat 11. Have like Soldado, and then behind him would be Lamella, Sissoko,
Paulinho.
There you go. Just, you put together this scapegoat 11, and I bet you've got hundreds and hundreds of international caps there.
Oh, totally.
Jermaine Genius for me was the biggest scapegoat there of all time, because quite often he didn't actually play badly, and still he would take the stick. But Charlie, well done to you for saying, for doing the right thing really at White Hart Lane. Like, a lot of people wouldn't have done that, and actually you're right. Well, like, why are they rounding on one player when we're 4-0 up? He's come on, get behind the new signing, and just think, if we get the Sissoko that played for France in the summer, well, then we've got a good player on our hands.
Exactly. I mean, it's the difference with him between us having an asset or a sort of big old lump that's just going to make us worse. And I'd rather do everything in our power as fans to get the dude that was playing, you know, storming down the right wing for France.
But you are looking for common sense in a football stadium.
That's true.
Which is always a difficult... It's a place where you do kind of...
Exactly, which is why I kind of regretted opening my mouth. No good can... You know, what am I hoping for? For them to go, good point, sir, well done.
I retract my mocking
applause. So fine. And if you're listening, people in the stand, please don't come and find me. Because you're all quite big and frightening. Which I didn't realise when I saw.
What did you make of Pochettino's comments about Sissoko? Did you see it as a kind of... winding him up and letting him go, or kind of giving him a point to prove, or do you think he was just genuinely a bit annoyed with him?
I think he was just upset. Pochettino, all he does most of the time is talking cliches, the fans, the supporters, I'm very, very happy, all this kind of stuff. So I do actually take note when he actually comes off script. So I think he was genuinely annoyed, and he wanted a reaction. Whether he gets that reaction, now we have to see what kind of person Sissoko is. It's been a decent start. He's got an assist. He did okay. And I think he'll start against Moscow. And he's got a huge opportunity there to start righting some wrongs now.
I imagine Pochettino feels that transfer quite keenly, in that he probably was the one to ask Daniel Levy to pay that money for him last minute. Or at least, you know, he said after the Liverpool game, I want a forward who can run directly at defenders, who gives us a different, you know, Mane style form of attack. So he'll know that signing is kind of on him. You know, that's not the sort of black box committee giving him some sort of French winger for 6 million. That's like, we've spent 30 million, or, you know, I know the instalment thing's up for discussion, but 30 million for a 27-year-old, you know, this is your sort of gift, if you like. Here's a present for you as a thank you for last season. So if he does go tits up, then that's kind of it's his failing, I think.
Daniel Levy just every day as Pochettino comes in, just looks at him and goes, how's the Soko?
Yeah, I reckon that's probably what happens.
But in a way, though, does that not make it a bit more odd that he kind of, he did go a bit off script in the press conference and said things that he wouldn't normally say? Because if he was his boy, would he not be a bit more protective? It makes me wonder whether he's always making it clear that he wasn't his boy. It was like,
perhaps
he's not the one I wanted. Yes, I wanted you to spend 30 million and I wanted you to buy a player who can break defensive lines, but not that guy. I wanted Zaha or Blassie or whoever it was he actually wanted. Neither of whom I think would have been ideal either, by the way. Blassie just looks exactly what Blassie's been like for the last 10 years, just an unpredictable, unproductive winger, just that doesn't really do much. Zaha's having a good season, but you don't want to spend 30 million on Zaha. United tried to
only score two goals.
I would pay 30 million tomorrow for Zaha.
I guess he's younger, he's got more
settled. There's something that I quite like about him. We haven't had proper whip for a long time, and I would like him just getting out wide and just crossing it in. He's tall, he's really athletic.
He's very strong.
He's got a lot of skill there, and I think with the right manager he could be good.
I would like to think that Pochettino look, you know, kind of takes a bespoke view of how to motivate each player.
Yeah.
And I imagine that with Sissoko, he has fallen into like bad practice training wise. He's not the most motivated of guys from the last five seasons at Newcastle. And he probably thinks, you know what, in order to ingratiate him into my way of doing things, I've got to take drastic action here, which is, to his mind, a big old kick up the arse, and see what happens. And that's his chosen tactic, I think, for Sissoko. I don't think it's, you know, he's not Kane or Rose or any of those guys that are like very much part of the Maurizio sort of, you know, fatherhood club. Yeah. And he's just thought to himself, you know, perhaps he came in and gave the softly approach for the first few weeks and he's got nothing back. Perhaps a rocket up his arse is what this guy needs. And we'll see. I mean, the signs were vaguely encouraging, I think, but, you know, judging a performance against Swansea, I think, isn't perhaps it. And I think Bardi's right. I think he'll start at Wembley, and you hope that that's the game where he sort of, you know, finally is off his leash and he runs wild down that wing. But we'll see.
And that's exactly the way I'd like to think it's been. I mean, I always like to give maximum credit to Poch and just assume that the best thing that can happen is what he did, because I want to love him more than anything, and I also think that he is a good man manager, particularly given some of the comments that past players have said about him, and like you say, treating people differently is not necessarily a bad thing. It's really tough. I'm a manager at work. I know what it's like. You've got a real, it's, you want to be fair and treat everyone equally, but equally you can't treat everyone the same because everyone's different and everyone's motivated by different things. So that balancing act is so true in the workplace, and the workplace of a training ground is no different to any other workplace in many ways.
And Sissoko's not like a lot of our signings. You know, he's not a malleable young lad from, you know, a lower league. He's sort of lesser foreign league, if you like. He's a 27-year-old full international who's been earning a fortune for a long time. He might not feel that he has to, you know, treat him like he would a 19-year-old kid. It's, you know, a grown man who's been there, done that, and he wants something from him. So he's going about it in a robust way. And yeah, you just, you know, I would love Mr. Sissoko to come good. I really would. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he left in January, quite honestly, because the other flip side to Pochettino is, you know, as we've seen, if you get on his wrong side, often that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
And I think if Sissoko doesn't put in any decent signs of progress between now and January, if Inter Milan or someone came in, I really wouldn't be surprised if we had a replacement lined up, then he was let go for on loan or something.
I mean, he probably won't get that many opportunities between now and January to actually impress, so he needs to do something on the training pitch, basically. But yeah, I mean, you both said there that you want him to start against, I was going to say Cesca, but I heard earlier it's...
Is that what you're supposed to say?
It's got, no, it is. It does. It goes up three times, so it's Cesca.
Sasha
Gurinov on Football Weekly says this.
Ah.
He goes up three times. Sasha.
Nice. That sounds nice. So I take it you're both going. Still.
Yes, I'm going.
Yeah, I'm also going.
Yeah.
What team do you think we'll go with? Because in some ways, I want us to pick the strongest team and go out on a high and try and win at Wembley.
Yeah. I mean, as much as, you know, most of us have joked about losing because it gets us out of the Europa, you know, seat of embarrassment or whatever. But Pochettino clearly wants to win because he's spoken about needing a victory at Wembley to kickstart a whole season there. And, you know, the difference, once I'd sort of calmed down from the whole being kicked out of the Champions League thing, you know, the difference between this Europa campaign as against previous seasons is, you know, we're not being airlifted into the group stages, we're being dropped in at the knockout stages. So, you know, if we don't want to take it seriously, that's two matches,
yeah,
and then we're out of it.
Yeah.
Or if we do want to take it seriously, then, you know, it's not that many games until you're really at the business end, and it gets quite exciting. And then you've got the cherry of Champions League football, which might be a lot more appealing if, say, we lose touch with the top four by February or something, and it's looking a bit unlikely that we'll catch them. Suddenly then the Europa gets quite exciting, I reckon. So I think it'll be a mixed bag team. I don't think he's going to, you know, play a bunch of kids in Sissoko. I think there'll be some strong guys there.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll probably rest Kane. Maybe we'll rest Dembele, but we'll go pretty strong. Cesca was shit. They got nothing.
Don't
there.
Do this, Bardi.
No, they do every time. They drew with Leverkusen though.
But Leverkusen are terrible. The fact that Leverkusen have got out of our Champions League group, you know, we could.
They weren't terrible in the second half.
We could sit here talking for 45 minutes about how bad Leverkusen are and how bad our Champions League run has been. But 10 years, man. Akinfeev hasn't kept a clean sheet for 10 years. That's 43 games. Their manager, I think Slutsky, he either has left or he's about to leave. Yeah, this will be his last game.
Oh, wow.
They're not very good. I want us to win, get that monkey off our back and stamp on its head so we can go into next season and Europa League with optimism.
It'll be weird to see how many people go. I think that might have a bearing on the performance potentially if it's a really underwhelming, you know, flat atmosphere, which it might well be because we're out, if, you know, there's only 50,000 people in there or something. But I reckon I'll be pleasantly surprised by the turnout.
I mean, in hindsight, we should have just done the big, largest scale 1882 ever, shouldn't we? Just to try and generate some noise there.
But the players can't use atmospheres.
No,
just go out there, beat them. At least end on a high. It's been a clusterfuck of a Champions League. Let's finish with a win.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're thinking Harry Winks and Vincent Janssen to start, but other than that, broadly the strongest possible team.
Probably the full-backs will rotate, I imagine, with United in mind. I
Champions think League expert Kieran Trippier to come back in.
Yeah, the specialist. is Davis back yet?
No, that Davis injury is starting to get as worrying as the Lamella one.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely worried about Lamella's injury, the way Poch was speaking about it. It doesn't sound like he's anywhere near ready close to being back. Although, having said that, he was kind of tweeting hopeful things.
Wasn't this quite similar to Lamella's first season when he would have injuries and they were supposed to be knocks and would suddenly become 3 months at a time? And, you know, I imagine a lot of that was just hiding from Sherwood. But he does seem to be prone to the sort of lingering injury. But yeah, we need him back big time, I think.
We didn't actually do our man of the match for the Swansea game, but who would you say was...
Ooh.
I would say Christian Eriksen, personally. I thought he was back to his very best, albeit against weaker opposition, but you can only beat what you're up against. And I thought he was excellent. He was very creative, used the ball well, scored a couple of goals, which is just lovely because he's needed this run of goals. And I think it will set him up nicely for the United game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would like... We didn't mention Son's goal was very good as well.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh, how did we miss that?
Son's like scissor kick volley was incredible, but also Kane's second goal was lovely. Like the way he changed his stride and just put that away with aplomb. Yeah, we were, like, our finishing was great in those opportunities there.
It was a 1-11 very good set of performances, I think. I thought for Tomlin, as you said, Chris, was excellent. I thought... That was when I really felt like Kane was back to being in his pomp last season, Kane, the way he was sort of strutting around the pitch. I thought his first touch was superb. The way that he was bringing other players into the game was terrific. And the fact he sort of just took ownership of our attacks, he just wanted everything to run through him. And he had that like really sort of brilliant, imperious nature to him that he's been working towards getting. So it made me really excited about the fact that he's already... I mean, I know like 95% of them are penalties, but he's already got, you know, like 9 goals or something, 8 goals, and he's barely lukewarm yet.
Cool. Right, we're going to have a short break because I feel like I'm going to have a coughing fit again. I need some water. And we're back to talk about the Man U game as well as the FA Cup draw, which was happening anytime now. Yeah. We need to draw the fucking knowledge, blood. Hi, this is Windy, back with the weekly youth update, looking at our young players and players out on loan. Very brief youth update this week due to time constraints. Starting off the under-18s, they lost 3-2 against Norwich on Saturday morning. A pity because they've been in good form in the under-18s, playing some good stuff, and lots of players have kind of hit their top form at the best time. The goals this week were from Jack Rowles, again from midfield, and Rio Griffiths. They now don't play a league match until January, but do go off to Florida to participate in the tournament this month, so some under-18 action. I've not seen them for a while. I've got to make more of an effort in the new year. It's partly because I live near Windsor and partly because the kick-off times have clashed with other things, be that Spurs first team matches or whatever. But yeah, hopefully I'll get to see them a few times in the new year and give you an update on progress of specific players. The under-19s play their final UEFA Youth League match on Wednesday against CSKA Moscow. Hopefully they'll end on a high, but it's been a disappointing campaign in that competition this year, much like the first team. I don't think the kind of balance of under-18s and under-23 players has worked as well as they'd hoped. But let's hope they've learned something from it. The under-23s next game is on Monday the 12th. I believe that's against Derby off the top of my head. Just to add also that in the podcast I mentioned in the second half about Cameron Carter-Vickers having received an England under-17 call-up. I've not been able to clarify that. I remember that there was talk he was going to be called up by England. I think maybe the USA just got in there first. So yeah, fact-checking myself there. As ever, if you're interested in more young players, follow me on Twitter at WindyCoys. That's Coys for Come On You Spurs. Welcome back to the second half of the Fighting Cock. You probably heard me do a youth update then, but I haven't recorded one yet. We'll see how I feel. See if I've got time once I've watched the Westworld finale. So yeah, we might be speaking quickly in this half so we can get through content to get home and watch Westworld. Very quickly, cool calm, 12 men a day commit suicide. It's thought that it's because we don't want to talk about our problems. If you're feeling sad or low, talk to someone. It doesn't have to be someone you know. Calm have a helpline open from 5 p.m. until midnight. The number is 0808 802 5858. Also, their web chat is open from 5 p.m. until midnight. Visit thecalmzone.net and their Twitter handle is @thecalmzone. Okay, we didn't get to speak about the Manchester United game, which is upcoming. I watched the United-Everton game and for about two-thirds of that match, I was thinking, here we go, just a routine 2-0 United win. And then the doubts started to show towards the end of the game. They got really nervous. Their clearances were just going straight to Everton players. They had nothing up front. Fellaini came on and was his usual clumsy self in the box, and they blew it. And it was lovely to see, to be quite honest with you. What have you made of United this season?
I think Mourinho's kind of he looks a little bit lost. For the first time, I think he's doubting himself. He's coming out in his press conferences full of bravado and stuff, but you can see a 1-0. Normally, Chelsea would, a Mourinho team would see it off. Like Chelsea 1-0. Okay, we haven't got the second goal, but they would deal with it and see the game out. He's unable to do that. He hasn't got the players to do it. And I don't understand his reasoning for Fellaini. It just doesn't make any sense. He's making odd decisions. The way he's kind of treated Martial and Mkhitaryan and an obvious talent like Rashford is quite puzzling. He seems to maybe have lost his beliefs in how his team should play.
I mean, the stats certainly back that up. I think his last... So he's picked up 36 points from his last 30 Premier League games across Chelsea and Manchester United. He's won 9, drawn 9, lost 12, which, to put that into context, Alan Kerbishley picked up 40 points to Mourinho's 36 in the same period, which, you know, shows you that theory that elite managers have a decade to sort of rule at the top of the game before their sort of methods become outmoded, players tune them out. Yeah, that might be bearing fruit with what's happening to Mourinho. However, in saying that, I feel like those group of players will see a game like Spurs at home, you know, the Pogbas, the Mkhitaryan, who showed signs of life, I think, against Everton for the first time in a United shirt, Zlatan, all these guys, Martial looks like he might be coming back into some form. They'll see a sort of glamour fixture against Spurs in front of the cameras. That's probably where they'll, you know, come to life, and we'll see the Pogba of Juventus and we'll see the Mkhitaryan of Dortmund, no in our luck. However, we should go there in good heart. You know, I think, as you were both saying, you know, once they'd gone a goal up, they didn't seem to have it in them. Sort of tactically, they didn't seem to have it in them mentally to see that out. So I think if we can get the crowds a bit restless, if we can get on the front foot, get them panicking a bit, it's there for us.
I think they'll probably sit quite deep, which will play into our hands, because I don't think they've got the back four, especially with I think Eric Bailly out. He looked a really good defender. I don't think they've got the defence to be able to sit deep, but they'll try, and then they'll try and hit us with a bit of pace on the counter-attack. If we control the game, if Dembele and Wanyama have a good quality game where they just boss Herrera and Carrick, I don't think even Pogba can cope with that, to be honest with you.
I thought Carrick had a really good first 60 minutes against Everton. Really impressed with him. Just he's such a calming influence for United. And I feel like Pogba's got better since Carrick's come back into the team. And that's... It doesn't surprise me to be saying that, because he's such a good footballer who brings the best out of players around him. And Herrera's had a really good season as well. But like you say, I feel if Dembele can play anything like the best Dembele... I thought he pretty much was against Swansea, then we should win the midfield battle. We've got in Wanyama and Dembele two of the most physically imposing but also technically tidy midfielders in the country, and there's enough there to overcome Carrick, Herrera and Pogba. Just interested to see whether we match up to them in midfield and go with a three, or whether we stick with this 4-2-3-1, which we now well, we've been calling for a while, but has worked so well in the last couple. Really interested to see what he does there. The other thing was, I do think Martial is starting to really look like the player that they hoped he would become again. He'd had a quite severe dip in form where he just looked completely bereft of confidence, but now he looks keen to take players on. He's getting shots away, so having him on one flank and then Mkhitaryan coming in off the other flank, that's a really dangerous side. That's a top quality side. So if Alderweireld is fit enough to start, then by God, get him on the pitch, because there's going to be some defending to do.
But even those three, they don't fear me. I don't have the fear that we used to have going to Old Trafford. You know,
no.
Used to shit yourself. It'd be like, okay, we've lost that. But in the last few years, we've done better. I know we lost last season, but it was the
season before was that dreadful 3-0 as well, wasn't it? That
yeah.
Was, but then that was a very, you know, early stages of sort of Pochettino Tottenham.
Yeah, but I'm not, you know, I'm confident that we can get a result there. They are quite a way off the top four, and they're there because they haven't been playing well. They're not in the greatest run of form, and I think we can get something.
Definitely. I think Kane is hugely vital. I mean, as ever, yeah. But I think, you know, we mentioned their defensive disorganisation and issues in terms of people stepping up for him, and I think if he can rattle those centre backs in particular, who look fairly dreadful to me right now. I think he could really fill his boots, and I can't really remember a sort of signature Kane moment at Old Trafford. I don't think he's really had one yet, apart from the boot and the ball.
Yeah,
back.
I was going to say
that. Yeah. Oh, that was glorious. Oh, one of my favourite Harry Kane moments. I love that. I really love that. Rocco looks a mess, doesn't he? I mean, he should have sold him
in the summer.
Back. He's a left back, if anything.
I mean, it speaks to the incredibly lopsided nature of that team.
Yeah.
You know, you've got world class players next to people like Rocco, who.
Yeah. But he had a great World Cup. He played really well for Argentina. He
left back though, right?
Yeah, he played a left back that didn't attack.
Yeah.
His sole purpose was just to be. Like, he was almost like a Tony Pulis fullback.
Yeah.
His job was just to be a centre back out wide and then just not go forward. But he had a really good World Cup, and I wanted us to sign him. But he's looked completely out of place at Man U, and it's strange because they've got a player who I love Damian. I think Damian is a fantastic fullback, and if he's still out of favour, we should sign him.
He played on Sunday. Damian played left back.
Yeah, they're playing him at left back.
He was okay. Yeah.
Reign of terror against Luke Shaw continues.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, Shaw's nowhere to be seen now, is he? But then, I mean, you look at the bench they had on Sunday, and they've got Rashford, Fellaini, Dave Blind, Juan Mata, Jesse Lingard and Eric Bailly, plus the goalkeeper.
Oh, so Bailly was on the bench.
Yeah.
So he might be back.
I mean, that's a strong bench. That's a deep...
I don't want to see Mata on the field against us. I think Mata's
great. He loves
great.
Playing against us.
Yeah, I think he's a great player. I hope they don't start him, because he scares the living shit out of me.
I mean, that's the thing. If you think, all right, you play Mata behind Zlatan with Marcel and Mkhitaryan on the right... With Pogba, I mean, I would play Schneiderlin just so that Pogba can, you know, run around and do whatever he does. I mean, that team not finishing in the top four is preposterous.
I mean, like, if we turn on Football Manager now, with that team, you win everything, man. And this just shows that Mourinho, he's lost it. He's not able to inspire the same kind of like attitude that Drogba, Lampard, Terry, check that spine. They would have killed their mothers for Mourinho, and he's just lost that. Maybe he was a fallout of the kind of attack against the doctor at Chelsea, where he lost Hazard and those key players, and maybe it's just followed him to Man United. I don't think he was the right man for Man U. If I was Manchester United, I would have gone for someone like Pochettino, someone who could actually build something, Well, not necessarily Pochettino, a manager with a young manager with a belief to who's actually going to stay there for 10 years. I think it was more of a desperation for Mourinho and for him. And also Portugal winning the Euros, kind of, I think that fucked up Mourinho a little bit, because I think that's probably his next step will be out of into international football.
I just think that with figures like Mourinho, as soon as the mask slips and as soon as you see that they're human beings and that they're vulnerable and they're not, you know, perfect or supermen, suddenly the players don't listen to the managers in the same way. As soon as they see that they're just fallible humans that make mistakes and can mess up, you know, he's not the same guy that would, you know, elicit that same loyalty from your Cheks and Lampards and Drogbas. Like, this United team, you know, couldn't care less. And that Chelsea team, you know, the Hazards and the Williams or whatever, you know, they weren't bothered either. And that's what's happened, I think, is that they see him, he's just another manager.
The mystique has gone now.
Yeah,
and
the mystique
has
gone.
You see it with the press sort of turning him against him as well. He's now pilloried for some of the things that he was held up for doing when he first arrived. He's just sort of seen as a grumpy old man, basically.
Apart from Sky. Sky is still, they're still bowing at the temple of Mourinho. They still love him. And it was part of, that's part, I ditched Sky this year for the first time, because after the start of the season when Mourinho and Ibrahimovic was there, the whole fanfare that it got, it was just too much for me to take. And I cancelled it on that day. Every now and then I have little pangs of like, fuck, I've got to get it back. But no, I've stayed strong.
What are our predictions for the score on the weekend?
I'm actually confident. I feel like we've... I think a lot will depend on Wednesday. Because I think if we have another morale-draining defeat at home at Wembley in the Champions League, I think we might struggle to then motivate ourselves for the United match. If all goes well and we steamroll a CSKA, or however we want to pronounce it, I feel like we can go to Old Trafford and win, and there aren't many times I've said that during my lifetime, but we've certainly got the players to do it. Kane's looking somewhere near his top form with Alderweireld, but being back, it's a boost. I mean, you just imagine that him getting off the coach and the other players seeing him back there must just lift their spirits no end, because he's just absolute quality. And I was thinking then, when we were talking about the United team, the one thing they're lacking is a classy centre back to play alongside Bailly and kind of bring him through. And you know, if they've got any brains, they should be paying whatever it takes to get Alderweireld. But not that I think he'd necessarily go and join Mourinho, but certainly Alderweireld or Van Dijk or someone who's a bit older and more established at the back would improve United no end.
That Toby Alderweireld plays for us is one of the most mystifying things in world football, as far as I'm concerned.
He's phenomenal.
At the price he was available at, having proved himself in Spain, having proved himself in England, having been the age he was, I think, late 25, maybe early 26 when we got him, is ridiculous. And the fact that we've still, you know, there's not been a sniff of interest seemingly in him. I think the whole of the summer I was waiting to read in a newspaper at some point, you know, Bayern Munich start sniffing around or something. But fortunately, you know, we're blessed to have him. He's superb.
I think it's definitely a strange one. I think it's maybe because he couldn't get into the Atletico team, and for rather like Vertonghen, on the international stage, he was played at fullback.
That's true, yeah.
Which kind of like helped keep his profile low. But he was great at Southampton. And to be honest with you, I was a little bit like skeptical when we signed him. But then obviously, as soon as you see him play, you realise he's probably one of the best centre backs in the country, without doubt.
When we signed him, I was expecting him to play in midfield quite a lot more, because we'd seen him play so well in midfield for Southampton, and I thought, okay, you know, utility player, he'll come in, he'll do a job wherever we need him, right back, central midfield. There's never been a sign of him playing a different position, just centre back and playing centre back bloody well. Just an incredible player, and like Charlie says, we're kind of lucky to have him in many ways.
Yeah, I think so.
We have a question. Sorry, I didn't actually let you just make your predictions. I kind of went off on a tangent, didn't I?
2-0 Spurs.
I think 1-1. I can see us.
They are the draw specialists, right?
Yeah, I mean, we both kind of are, aren't we, to a degree. Yeah. I think we'll take the lead and then get pegged back. And then I think, much like the Arsenal game, I can see both teams settling for a point and taking the foot off the gas a bit. And I don't think a point would be a disaster for us either. I think as long as we can get out of there without losing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, unless we're like 4-0 up and then we draw, that would be bad.
it'd just be such a boost, wouldn't it, to come away with a win?
Yeah, I mean, we need a shot in the arm victory like that, don't we? Beating Swansea is one thing, but in order to get this season back on back on the rails, it feels like going to Old Trafford would be the perfect opportunity. I think you're right, I think they'll be bang up for it. I really do.
Because a win would be really important. Well, first of all, beating Moscow would be amazing because we're getting into a run of games now where we've got Moscow, Man U, then we've got
Burnley and Hull.
Burnley, Southampton, Watford.
We've got the games are starting to come now. It's that December period where it gets really fast. The games come like every 3-4 days. So the next two wins in the next two games would set us up beautifully.
This was last year when we accelerated, wasn't it? This was the time of year where we really hit our stride and the goals started flowing and players hit top form. So hopefully the same thing will happen again before we play Chelsea on the 4th of January and then Manchester City a couple of weeks later. So yeah,
then they're done, they're out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that the run we've got in January and February is not great, but let's not look forward that far because we'll just scare ourselves. Yeah,
let's think about Burnley now.
Let's think about
nice things.
So we have a question from, we have a couple of questions. Sean Armfield on Facebook said, would Marcus Edwards benefit from a top championship or lower prem loan, or is he better on the outer fringes of our squad?
I personally, and I bow down to your knowledge on this, Windy, of course, but I can't imagine that he'd be let go by Pochettino. I think Pochettino wants him ingrained in his ways, much like Winks. Yeah. I think these kind of blue chippers like Onomar and Winks and Carter Vickers, he likes to have around the place, and he wants them to learn good habits. And also he's of that size and build that, you know, you don't, and I'm sort of regressing to a old-fashioned view of sort of lower leagues perhaps, but you wouldn't want to send him, you know, to a Fulham or something and then he gets kicked up in the air every week and comes back sort of bruised and battered.
It is a slightly old-fashioned view, but I think there's a lot of truth in it, and also the refereeing standards are nowhere near as good as they are in the Premier League, so players don't necessarily get the same protection.
I also think, you know, if we do qualify for the Europa League, there could be an opportunity for him to get on the bench perhaps for a knockout game, or, you know, there was signs before this injury that, you know, we're only an injury tour away, particularly if Lamella doesn't come back anytime soon. You know, Poch is prone to springing a surprise on us like this, and, you know, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a few Premier League squads before the end of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen enough of Edwards, to be honest. I quite like the loan system, and there's been examples of it where it's worked quite well. I don't know. But then I do hold the hope that if we get in the Europa League, he'll get some time there. But I trust Pochettino to look after him. As Charlie said, he's a blue chip player. If he's that good, then you keep him under, you keep him close. You make sure he's eating well, you know, eating well, looking after himself, living it. Because there is a temptation of a young kid. He's got a nice contract, going away somewhere and maybe getting up to some business.
I also think Spurs seem to be incredibly wary of his sort of situation from a transfer / contract perspective, so having him around the place, hopefully, you know, brainwashing him into believing that his long term future is at Tottenham,
really making him feel a massive part of the first team
squad. Rather than bombing him out and going, well, you're off to Sheffield Wednesday for 3 months, we'll see you in March, you know, that's probably not going to endear him to the club as much as they want him to. So I think, whilst without treating him like sort of little Lord Fauntleroy for the whole time, you want him to feel like, you know, this is your team in a couple of years.
But then we have seen it work for us. Kyle Walker went to Villa, and he blossomed there, and he came back a bit.
Danny Rose took him an extra year, perhaps, to really kick on. But year in Sunderland did him good.
Huddleston, I think, as well. He went on loan to
Derby.
Did he go back
to Derby? Didn't he? Went to. No, he did go back to Derby.
Yeah, I think he went to Derby. Yeah.
And Wolves, did he play? I want to say.
So there's examples where it's worked to our benefit.
We've also obviously Kane had numerous loans. Townsend was a regular loanee.
I guess these are all pre-Pochettino.
They're pre-Poch, that's what I was going to say. And like you say, Winks, Onomer, Carter Vickers, none of them have gone out on loan. They're all now part of the first team squad, and I imagine that the same thing will happen with Marcus Edwards. And I'm told that we've got other players who are kind of becoming part of the first team squad unit as well. Someone like Sam Shashiwa, who's been training quite a lot with the first team, who is the kind of next Edwards in the pecking order, I guess.
But he's is already on the next Edwards.
Yeah. Sorry, Marcus. Yeah, yesterday's wonder kid.
he's not quite at the same.
He did turn 18 level last week, so he's getting on a bit now.
Yeah, Tishu was good. I mean, he's not Edwards' levels of good, because I think Edwards potentially could be an exceptional talent. But Tishu is a really handy player. Scored a couple in midweek, and just a really handy little player who also plays sort of number 10 idea.
Okay. Speaking of younger players, I've got a lot of American soccer-loving friends who are terrified about, with Klinsmann now gone from the States, that, and without having, despite calling him up to a squad, he didn't get on the pitch for those two games that he was in the squad for the States. And they're all now very, very worried that England are going to sink their hooks into Carter Vickers and deny him from the Americans.
Well, it would take it would mean Southgate has to be quite clever. He's going to have to play him.
Well, I think call him up for 21s and get him, feeling English.
But just because you play for under 21s, you can still play for.
Yeah, just maybe get him into the setup or something. If they even rate him that highly, I mean, obviously the States are going to be coveting him a lot more than England are, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. I find it baffling that England have. I mean, maybe England have had made a play for him and he rejected them. I do think it's odd that he's not been involved in more England squads.
Has he been called up to any youth squads?
As far as I'm aware, he's not. I think he was in the 17s, I want to say.
Right, because the States got their claws into him very early, didn't they?
Yeah, he's really good. He's a very, very competent player. What a strange decision to call him up to the senior squad and then not just give him a couple of minutes and get the job done.
They were losing 4-0 as well. Yeah. Like, that's what the complaint was. Why not just stick him on for a minute?
They're very good at that, the United States. They take expat, like Germans and Africans. They're really clever at calling them up and getting them kind of, like, as you say, ingrained.
Yeah, Fabian Johnson, who's the sort of star guy now for them, is exactly that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Next question is from Keza187 on Twitter, who says, if Hugo was to leave in the summer, realistically, who could we get to replace him? Would any of the panel take Joe Hart?
How's Joe Hart doing for Torino?
He's doing okay. Yeah. They lost at the weekend, but other than that, they've had a good season.
He seems to really be taking to it, just from looking at things like Instagram. He's sort of throwing himself into it.
He arrived there in his first press conference. He started speaking Italian really badly, but he gave it a go, and he's had the right spirit about things. Sometimes a player can go on loan and just be a bit moody, especially if they're an established player. But he's gone there. He's trying to speak Italian. Torino are playing really well. They've got a wonderful Italian striker, Bellotti, who's scoring goals all the time. So they're overachieving.
Got Falcao as well, haven't they?
Who's scoring goals as well, man. He didn't have the greatest time at Roma, but at Torino he's finding his feet again. And he still looks a decent player. But Hart's doing okay. Would I take him at Spurs? No. I think he's a bit too old now.
Is he 30 now?
Must be 30, 31 maybe.
I don't think he offers us anything really. I'd prefer to sign a younger goalkeeper.
He'd be on the big wages as well. Mm. Huge wages.
And the thing is, City didn't want him because he's no good with his feet, and we kind of rely on a goalkeeper who's good with his feet. So
even though we've got Lloris.
His passing, his short passing is good. It's just his longer passing, which is pretty atrocious, isn't it?
I mean, anything over a metre.
That's the thing, right, though. He's good. His touch is good.
My thing about this is that all goalkeepers are rubbish at kicking.
Yeah.
I think, if you support a club, you believe that your goalkeeper is bad at kicking. There is not one goalkeeper in world football who is really, really good. Mm. I just think that you get skewed.
Manuel Neuer.
Yeah.
But even he takes such stupid chances that sometimes you're he would give me a heart attack.
Yeah.
I imagine that probably, if Hugo does go, it would be someone like Butland, wouldn't it, go in for?
Yeah.
He's at that level. He's at Stoke. Tottenham would seem a logical next move for 20 million or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have you seen any of Paulo Lopez?
I've not seen Paulo Lopez, have you?
No.
Because he's played for the 23s.
He's been in the last couple of
under
23 squads. Yeah, I've not seen either of those games.
Because he played the Arsenal game that we lost.
Yeah, he was sort of drafted in, which I found really odd. And it must be a bit of a kick in the teeth to him. It's just, this move is so weird for his career. What's he looking to achieve, and what are we looking to achieve?
I can only imagine that Vorm is leaving next summer and they want him ingratiated so that he becomes the natural backup.
But why do they not just sign him permanently straight away?
Maybe it's a try before you buy situation. If he's that much of a disaster, then both parties can walk away.
In that case, what does he get out of it? Unless it's a monetary thing.
I guess that. I mean, he'd lost his place at Espanyol. I think he had his sort of half a season in the sun, and then they got in a more experienced goalkeeper.
Literally.
So maybe he thought, I'm not going to play here, so I might as well not play for more money in a situation which might become a long-term thing for me. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, he's becoming one of those
answers to a quiz question, isn't he?
Yeah.
Poor old pal.
And well, we got it's not the first Spanish goalkeeper we've signed that never played. We had the one that always pops up, Cesar.
Who
was the Champions League? It's like a Bardi's brainbuster. Who was the Champions League Spanish Champions League winning goalkeeper? Yeah. Spurs sign. It was fucking Cesar.
Yeah. But bizarrely, there's actually a really good kind of clutch of young English goalkeepers around at the moment in Button and Pickford. Yeah. And Tom Heaton. Heaton's been sensational.
Isn't Heaton actually like in 31 or something?
He's a bit older.
Yeah, he's pretty old.
Young in terms of
keepers.
Yeah, and coming to prominence. Yeah,
you feel like it would be between Butland and Pickford, but then you know, we're just as likely to go and sign a Belgian goalkeeper for $8 million from Genk or something like that.
But Pickford looks a player though, right? His shot stopping is really impressive for such a young keeper.
Little Tommy Turgoose from This Is England.
Yeah. He is right. Just like him, isn't he? Yeah.
I'm still not convinced.
No?
He's a great shot stopper. I feel like I would need to see him do the fundamentals well over a longer period of time.
It's very easy to look really good for a team that's in relegation form and facing a lot of shots. It's quite it's very different to being like Hugo Lloris, where it's all about position. It's all about how you play the game when you're not being tested and being ready at those key moments. It's very easy to make 10 saves when you've been shot like 15 times.
I don't know if I've not read anything about this because it frightens me too much, but is there like actual concern around the Lloris situation at all?
Was it The Sun published that story this weekend saying that essentially, yes, if he don't qualify for the Champions League, he'll be looking to move? But it's The Sun, so who knows? Yeah.
And also, I mean, I wouldn't blame him. Quite honestly, I feel like he deserves the right to play for a Champions League perennial, and playing one season in five isn't what, you know, that's not fair on him, I don't think.
If it does annoy me, then when you've got players that I'm going to leave if I don't get in the Champions League, then fucking get in the Champions League.
Yeah.
You know, perform, get in the Champions League, and then, you know.
Yeah. I think because we had a season, because he did get us in the Champions League, if you like, I wouldn't feel quite so sore about it. And he was the only player that probably came out of that god-awful campaign, which after this season we will never speak of again, with any credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Jesus Christ, what a...
We haven't mentioned the FA Cup draw, have we? So while we're on half-time break, we spotted that we've drawn Villa at home. Which in years gone by would have been an all Premier League clash between two of the kind of famous old sides. Obviously at the moment Villa are down in their luck somewhat, although not so much under Bruce.
They lost their first game under Bruce on the weekend, I think I saw. So but I mean they're slowly turning it around,
aren't they? I mean they're not what they once were, but in a way they're better at this point than they were at the same time last year. But it's a good draw, isn't it? I mean,
Bardi and I were talking about how much we would absolutely love a cup run. I know this is a tired old cliche, but it feels like Pochettino needs some silverware. He needs a proper signature victory in a big game, and these players need to show that as well. They need, for me, I've not quite forgiven them for Chelsea, Newcastle, Southampton, that miserable run at all, really, and they need to show that. On those games where something really is riding on it, that they're able to step up and do it, and the cup would be, I'd absolutely love it.
And Harry Kane needs a trophy. Ledley King got his cup. I know it's only one cup, but he got his cup. He got his name.
Yeah.
He's got his part of the history. Yeah. And I'd love Harry Kane to have his little part of history. Harry Kane, Hugo Lloris, Alderweireld, all these guys.
We're talking about Lloris potentially leaving if he didn't qualify for the Champions League. Maybe winning a trophy would say something to him. You know, we are capable of winning trophies. And once you've won one thing, it can lead to other trophies.
Would you rather win the Europa League or the FA Cup?
Europa League.
Europa League, because of the Champions League qualification.
Yeah.
And might lead to
to play the Champions League winners in the Europa Super Cup, which would be sexy.
Back to Monaco, our favourite place.
They're moving it around.
Oh, they're moving it around.
It's on tour. Yeah.
Don't have to play in the car park anymore. Is the Europa League final somewhere like Aberdeen or somewhere this year? Rubbish. We could look. Villa, I mean, I suppose Villa at home, it all depends on which team we put out, because Pochettino isn't always known for favouring the FA Cup, and obviously that third round comes in the middle of, you just come out of Christmas, the players are exhausted. I mean, what have our
Pochettino FA Cup runs look like. I mean, we beat Leicester in the third round, was it last year, eventually?
Yeah.
And then lost to Palace in the fourth round. That the season Palace before that, horrible. Leicester knocked us out, didn't yeah. they? Was that the third round then, or it was very early, I think?
Just to let you know, the Europa League final is in. It's at the Friends Arena in Sweden. So that'd be, oh, okay. that'd be great.
Interesting.
Is that who plays there? Gothenburg? Or
no, it's in Solna. It's in Stockholm.
Okay. Stockholm. Interesting. Cool. Well, I think that probably. Interesting. Yeah.
Sorry to look forward
on that
to.
One, Joe. Thank you, lads, for making up this three-man pod. It's had a different feel to usual, but I've enjoyed it. Been getting some good, solid chat. It's always good to see
a pleasure,
Charlie.
Guys. A pleasure.
Good to have you back
Love
on,
to
mate.
See you guys.
And Barney, as ever.
It hasn't been weird. The chap on Reddit said, "Will it be weird me being here with you two?"
In what way?
Would I be like take me back to my days?
Oh, I see. Like,
like a bit of a
spare wheel.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, we've got our own little thing going on now with exactly. the extra.
You've not noticed that I've had my hand on Chris's knee, so we got away with that. So that's good.
Cool. Well, you've been listening to The Fighting Cock. As ever, if you want to leave reviews on iTunes, please do. But if not, then fine.
Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
GEICO asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.